So our next speaker is Matthias Wilhelm, who will tell us about form factors and the dilatation operator from on-shell methods.
Thank you very much for the introduction, and many thanks to the organizers for giving me the opportunity to speak here. I want to tell you something about form factors in N equals 4 super Young-Mills theory, and in particular, how we can use them to obtain the dilatation operator of this theory from on-shell methods. This talk is based on one work by myself from last October, another work in collaboration with Drittiman Nandan, Christoph Sieg, and Gang Yang, and this third work also with Florian Lubbert from April. Now, after giving you a short motivation why we should study form factors, I will compute the G-level form factors at the minimal number of legs for generic operators and tell you how they can be thought of as spin chains. And then going to one-loop order, I will compute the corresponding corrections and from them the complete one-loop dilatation operator. And before concluding with a short summary and outlook, I will tell you how this also works at two loops. Now, one very basic and very interesting object in any quantum field theory is the scattering amplitude. It is defined as the overlap of the vacuum O with an n-particle outgoing on-shell state. Another very interesting quantity is the correlation function of gauge-invariant local composite operators. So we take these operators at space-time points xi, and we wedge them between two vacua. Now, form factors form a bridge between the purely on-shell amplitudes and the purely off-shell correlation functions. They are defined as the overlap of a state created from the vacuum by this operator O at position x and an n-particle outgoing on-shell state. Form factors in N equals 4 super Young-Mills theory were first studied by van Nerven 30 years ago, and in recent years there has been increased interest at weak coupling and also at strong coupling. However, previous studies have largely focused on a very special class of operators, namely those operators in the stress tensor supermultiplet and its generalizations. So in this talk, I want to study form factors of generic operators. There's also a second kind of motivation. The first was about the objects we study. The second one is about the methods we use to study them. So for amplitudes, on-shell methods, as you all know, are very powerful. And for correlation functions, two-point functions, and recently also three-point functions, integrability is a very powerful method. Now, it was found by Benjamin Zwiebel 4 years ago that there's a connection between certain contributions to the L-loop dilatation operator, namely the leading length-changing ones, and all three-level amplitudes. And this is based on the fact that both these objects are entirely determined by symmetry, and goes back to Niklas Zweisheit for the four-particle and one-loop case. So this observation motivated the study of amplitudes at weak coupling via integrability, which also appeared in Sever's talk, and what I want to tell you in this talk is that form factors also form a different kind of bridge, a bridge between on-shell methods and integrability. In particular, they allow us to revisit the spectral problem of integrability via on-shell methods and give a field-theoretic derivation and an extension of this connection between the dilatation operator and amplitudes to higher loop orders. I also want to mention some further works using on-shell approaches to the dilatation operator using correlation functions. In this nice work by Engelund and Reubern, also some one-loop matrix elements appeared. And then there's this work by Costa, Mitev, and Staudacher, and these later works by the Queen Mary group, about which Gap has told you on Monday. Now, let me tell you something about form factors as spin chains. In order to apply on-shell methods, we first do a Fourier transformation. So we exchange this position x for momentum q, and this q is not squaring to zero, so we call it off-shell. Then we obtain a momentum-conserving delta function, but the on-shell momenta do sum up to this Q and not to zero. We can also use spinor helicity variables. We use Nayer's enigmas for onshore superfields, and we define some color-ordered superform factors to split on the dependence of the gauge group generators in the same way that we do it for amplitudes. Now, I want to compute form factors for generic operators, so I should better tell you how these operators look like. We want to have gauge-invariant local composite operators, so we can take the trace over fields W that transform homogeneous under gauge transformations, all at a common space-time point X. Those fields are the scalars, the fermions, the anti-fermions, the self-dual part of the field strength, and the anti-self-dual part. And then we can also take covariant derivatives of these fields. Then we can use the equations of motion, the Bianchi identities, and the definition of the field strength to make all of these Greek indices completely symmetric. As the capital Latin indices are anyway completely anti-symmetric, we can now represent these fields in terms of two kinds of bosonic oscillators, alpha and beta, A and B, with indices alpha and alpha dot, and one kind of fermionic indices, D, with index oscillators in index alpha, and we can act with them on a suitable Fock vacuum. Now, these operators form the so-called spin chain of N equals 4 super-Young-Mills theory. Now, one can use simply Feynman diagrams to compute the minimal color-ordered tree-level superform factor for a generic operator O. And here, minimal means that we have as many outgoing legs as we have legs in fields in the operator. And then the result is L times the momentum-conserving delta function times the result of replacing all A oscillators in the oscillator picture by lambdas, all B oscillators by lambda tildes, and all D oscillators by etas. So from these, we make these replacements. And thus, the minimal form factors yield the spin chain of N equals 4 Super-Young-Mills theory in superspinor helicity variables, making it accessible to the onshore methods from the study of amplitudes. Now, let me go to one loop and connect this to the dilatation operator. I'll start with a lightning review of the dilatation operator. Gap has already told you a bit about this on Monday. So, in a conformal field theory, the dilatation operator measures the anomalous scaling dimensions, which are observables. And it was observed by Minaha and Zaremba and for the SO6 sector and Beisat-Beisat-Staudacher for the complete theory, that the one-loop dilatation operator, D2, can be mapped to the Hamiltonian of an integrable spin chain. Thus, the spectral problem, the problem of finding the eigenvalues of this dilatation operator, can be solved by beta unset techniques, which has led to the largely successful story of integrability in N equals 4 Super-Young-Mills theory. Now, how can we connect this to form factors? For a form factor, we can write the L-loop correction by some operators in a perturbative expansion in the loop coupling acting on the minimal tree-level form factor. So this is similar to the case of amplitudes, but for amplitudes, here we just have some numbers. Now, those are operators, as the composite operators O do not renormalize diagonally. Then we can look at the general structure of the divergences in 4 minus 2 epsilon dimensions, and we just take the logarithm as we do for amplitudes, and we find that we have a universal IR divergence, which is given by the cusp and the collinear anomalous dimension, and we have also a UV divergence, which is absent for amplitudes in N equals 4, and the coefficient of this UV divergence is simply the dilatation operator. So what you see here is that we can simply compute this I via onshore methods and extract the LLOOP deletion operator from it. Also, we have some finite terms which contain the remainder, and I'll come back to this later. Now, at one loop, we have a very powerful integral basis available. So we know that the minimal one loop form factor can be written for any operator as a linear combination of one mass triangle integrals, bubble integrals, and rational terms. And all we have to do is determine these coefficients, which can be done via cuts. So first we do the triple cut between P1, P2, and the rest of the diagram, which isolates the triangle integral with its coefficient. And on this triple cut, the minimal one-loop form factor factorizes into the product of two tree-level three-point amplitudes and the minimal tree-level form factor. And from this, we can determine that the triangle coefficient is nothing but minus this Mandelstam variable times the minimal tree-level form factor. Then we can do the double cut between P1, P2 and the rest of the diagram. This gives us the triangle integral and the bubble integral, but we've just computed this coefficient. And on this cut, the minimal one-loop form factor factorizes to the minimal G-level form factor and the four-point G-level amplitude. And again, we can determine the bubble coefficient from this cut, and we can write it as some explicitly known bubble coefficient operator acting on the minimal G-level form factor. And if you want to see the form of this, ask me later. So to sum it up, at one loop, the one loop minimal form factor for a generic operator O can be created from the minimal tree-level form factor by some interaction operator I1, which can be expressed as summing a density over all pairs of adjacent sites or legs of this minimal tree-level operator. And this density is given by an IR divergent triangle integral with a universal coefficient and some UV divergent bubble integral which has as coefficient the bubble coefficient operator here. Now, from the general structure of the divergence I've shown you before, we can simply read off that the complete one-loop dilatation operator is nothing but minus two times this bubble coefficient operator, which appears as coefficient of the UV divergence. So this result agrees with one of Niklas Beisert, found by Zwiebel in his thesis after replacing all A oscillators, B oscillators, and V oscillators by lambdas, lambda tildes, and eters. And in particular, this gives a field theoretic derivation of the aforementioned connection between the four-point amplitude and the one-loop dilatation operator observed in this work by Zwiebel. I also want to mention that the rational terms here are actually there, so they are non-vanishing even if we are in N equals 4 super Young-Mills theory. Now let us go to two-loop, and there we start with the simplest prime example of non-protected operators, which is the Kunishi operator. In contrast to the last talk, I look here at the Kunishi primary operator, which is given as the chase over two real scalars summed over all indices I. It's an eigenstate under renormalization, so we have no mixing. And the anomalous dimensions are known by field theory up to 5 loops and by integrability even up to 10. However, when applying onshore methods to this operator, some subtleties occur. Concretely, Bushevar and No, Dixon and Pennington observed a mismatch for the two-loop Kunishi anomalous dimension. So how does this mismatch come about? This is due to some subtleties concerning the regularization in 4 minus 2 epsilon dimensions. If we are doing the supersymmetric preserving dimensional reduction from 10 dimensions, we obtain 6 plus 2 epsilon real scalars, as the number of scalars in the dimension have to add up to 10 in dimensional reduction. So the Kunishi operator is the trace over all these 6 plus 2 epsilon scalars. If you're using the four-dimensional helicity scheme or any other four-dimensional onshore method, we have six scalars, and the closest we can get to the Konishi operator is this operator K6, which is expressed in terms of the six scalars occurring in Nyquist n equals 4 onshore superfield. Now, these operators differ by two epsilon scalars, which vanishes if epsilon is equal to 0, but can be multiplied by a divergent integral, so it can effectively lead to a finite or even divergent contribution in the final result. So this is similar to the mu terms, which are given by the four-dimensional and the d-dimensional momentum squared. And the four-dimensional onshore methods yield only the form factors of K6. But only K is the primary operator of the Konishi multiplet with the known Konishi anomalous dimension. So how can we solve these subtleties? We can do a group theoretic decomposition of the contributions to the minimal G level, to the minimal L loop form factor of such an operator. And as Gap has already told you for the one loop case, we have this identity contribution, the permutation contribution, and the trace contribution. Now, these two are linear in the number of scalars, whereas this one, those are independent of the number of scalars, whereas this one is linear in the number of scalars. We can obtain the sum of those two contributions from the traceless combination of the scalars in the BPS operator, and we can obtain this one from studying the form factor of K6. Now, we have a polynomial of degree 1, so we have completely fixed this for any number of n phi, in particular for the number occurring in the Konishi operator we are interested in. And we've checked this, that this yields the correct one and two-loop Konishi anomalous dimension. And I should also mention that similar subtleties occur also for other operators and can be solved analogously. Now, let's go to the form factors in the SU2 sector. The SU2 sector is built from single trace operators that are traces of two kinds of scalar fields, for example, phi 1,4 and phi 2,4, which we identify with spin up and spin down. And then we can also compute the two-loop minimal form factors of these operators via unitarity, and they are given by the sums of densities of range 2 and 3, for example, a contribution changing spin down and up in the operator to an external spin up down is given at range 2 by these three integrals, and if we have up down up and being changed to up up down, this is given at range 3 by these integrals. And from this, taking the logarithm, we can indeed obtain the two-loop dilatation operator. Now we've also computed the BDS remainder for form factors. So the formula looks exactly as for amplitudes. But now these I's are operators. So this one-loop squared result is actually the matrix product. And also we have to renormalize these interactions, which is denoted by the underscore. Then also the remainder is an operator. It's given by the sum over densities, and these satisfy some Wort identities with the SU2 generators JA, which relate the remainders of different operators. Then these remainders have also very interesting property with respect to their transcendentality, which occurred in all of yesterday's talks. So for amplitudes, we know that we have uniform maximal transcendentality. Now for form factors, this operator insertion breaks supersymmetry, so we have a non-supersymmetric object with mixed transcendentality. But we found that the highest transcendentality piece of this operator is the same for all of these operators in the SU2 sector. It's universal, and it agrees with the result found by the Queen Mary group for the two-loop remainder for the operator with all fields the same, about which Brenda has talked at last year's amplitude. Now, this led us to conjecture that the highest transcendentality piece is universal also beyond the SU2 sector, thus extending the maximal transcendentality principle to also these form factors. Now, if you want to see the results, ask me later. So, at this point, let me summarize. We have studied in this talk the form factors for generic operators in n equals 4 super Young-Mills theory. I have shown you that the minimal G-level form factor yields the spin chain of integrability in super spinning helicity variables, thus making it accessible to the onshore techniques of modern quantum field theory. And I've computed the cut constructible part of the one-loop minimal form factor for a generic operator, which allowed me to compute the one-loop dilatation operator from generalized unitarity for the complete theory, including all sectors, and thus also giving a field theoretic derivation of this connection by Zwiebel. Extending this to two-loop, we've computed the two-point two-loop form factor of the Konishi operator and extracted the two-loop Konishi anomalous dimension of it. And this has required some extension of the four-dimensional unitarity method, which I've shown you. Finally, we have computed the minimal two-loop form factors in the SU2 sector and obtained the two-loop dilatation operator from them, as well as the two-loop remainder function, which had some very interesting properties with respect to transcendentality. Now, what else is there to do? It would be very interesting to compute the two-loop form factor for a generic operator, as this would in particular give the complete two-loop dilatation operator, which is currently unknown. Then we are also working on applying the twister action for form factors. And the last point is actually already done in a different constellation. A paper appeared in the beginning of last week, where we applied onshore methods, Grassmannians, and integrability for form factors. And I'm happy to tell you more about this at the poster session, which is going to start after this talk. So now, let me thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, so thank you for that very nice talk. Are there any questions?
Do you have an understanding of the symmetries, in particular the Youngian symmetries in that setup?
So, at tree level, the Youngian symmetry for the amplitude can be formulated as some eigenvalue equation for the monodromy. And for form factors, we don't have this full Youngian symmetry, but we have a part of it. So the transfer matrix, which is the super trace, fulfills an eigenvalue equation for the form factors at tree level.